From a sheetrock announce booth in a tiny Ohio town, here's Fred with this month's DX Audio Service.
Thanks, Doc. Bill Hale and I are here at the corner of Latham and Cable Road, and we would like to welcome you to the National Radio Club's DX Audio Service for July 2007. This is issue number 268, and I'm Fred Vobey, the publisher of the DX Audio Service. My address is 706 McKenzie Drive, Lima, Ohio, 45805-1835. Telephone number is 360-382-1957. A subscription to the DX Audio Service for U.S. and Canadian members is $28. To Europe and elsewhere, it's $40. Tapes are sent via first-class mail, and you keep your cassettes. To subscribe or renew, make your check payable to the National Radio Club Incorporated and send them to me at the address that I just mentioned, or simply log on to our website at www.nrcdxas.org and sign up using our PayPal credit card system. You can also sign up to eDXN and get your DX audio service on your computer or iPod player in stereo. A subscription to eDXN is only $15. Just point your browser to http://www.e-dxn.com, and you can subscribe online with our PayPal credit card system, or contact Wayne Heinen at Post Office Box 473251, Aurora, Colorado 80047-3251 if you want to pay by check. Let's get on with the program. We got a lot to cover on this edition of the DX Audio Service, so here's Mr. Bill Hale.
And welcome, everyone, to AM Switch, this edition, July 2007. As always, let's start out with the call letter changes. On 870, a new station in Fitzwilliam Depot, New Hampshire, they've been assigned the call of WZNH. Now, a word about this new station. They'll have 780 watts during the day, 400 watts at night, directional night only. The night pattern heads 325 degrees. Fitzwilliam Depot is situated 13 miles northeast of Keene, 3 miles north of the Massachusetts state line, and centered east to west in the state. Back to call letter changes, a new station on 1180 in Rockville, Minnesota, KYES. They're not yet on the air, of course, with the no calls. 1300 WERE in Cleveland, Ohio is changed to WJMO using the slogan Praise 1300 WJMO. 1480 WDAS in Philadelphia, their new call WUBA. 1490 KICO Calexico, California, their new call sign is KGBA. Also on 1490, WTKU Pleasantville, New Jersey has made the switch to WTAA. And yet another 1490 station has changed. WJMO Cleveland Heights is now WEREX 1300. Their slogan on 1490 is News Talk 1490 WERE. And finally on 1510 CKOT in Tillandsburg, Ontario, they'll make the change to CJDL when their new FM station 107.3 signs on. Well, construction permits that have come on the air during the past month, 590 WCAB in Rutherfordton, North Carolina, their CP for U1, 1,000 watts during the day, 228 watts is on the air. Remember, U1 is non-directional day and night. 760 KTBA, Tuba City, Arizona, the construction permit to move to 760 from at 1050 with U1, 250 watts during the day, 60 watts at night, is now on. 970 WTBF, Troy, Alabama, their CP to change from a night directional signal to non-directional with a reduced power as U1, 5,000 watts during the day, 45 watts at night, is on the air. 980 KSVC, Richfield, Utah, their construction permit to raise the daytime power to become U2, 10,000 watts during the day, 1,000 watts at night, is now on. 1000 WMVP, Chicago, they're back to U4, 50,000, 50,000, after operating from the WLS 890 site while their new three-tower array was being readied for use. The day pattern remains unchanged, but the night pattern is skewed slightly counterclockwise with more signal being directed back toward the northwest and less toward the southeast. 1100 WZFN, Dilworth, Minnesota. Their CP for U2, 50,000 watts during the day, 440 watts at night, and critical hours, 5,000 watts, is now on. They're broadcasting from a new two-tower site. The standard kidney-shaped night pattern is centered at 315 degrees. 1130 WASP, Brownsville, Pennsylvania. Their CP for D1, that's daytime only, non-directional, 1,000 watts, with 1,000 watts during critical hours, is now on. 1180 WFYL, King of Prussia, Pennsylvania. Their construction permit to raise their daytime power to 1,000 watts is on the air, and they remain daytime only, non-directional. 1380 WABH, Bath, New York. Their CP for U4, that's two different patterns, 10,000 watts during the day, 450 watts at night, is now on. They added one tower to their standing two. The day pattern is a figure eight with lobes at 083 and 258 degrees, while the night pattern is directed at 350. 1430 WDJS, Mount Olive, North Carolina. Their CP for U4, 10,000 daytime watts, 5,000 watts at night from a new five-tower site is on the air. They use all five towers during the day, four at night. Both patterns favor the east. 1460 WTKT, Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. Their CP for U2, 5,000 watts during the day, 4,200 watts at night, is on the air. 1510 WWBC, Cocoa, Florida. Their CP to increase their daytime power and add critical hours designation as D4, that's two different patterns, 50,000 watts during the day, 25,000 watts during critical hours, is now on. 1570 WNAU, New Albany, Indiana. The CP to increase their daytime power to become U2, 2,500 daytime watts, 500 watts at night, is now on the air. 1580 WVKO, Columbus, Ohio. They're on the air, testing with new facilities of U4, 3,200 watts during the day, 290 watts at night. Reports indicate they have gotten their fourth tower up, but no commercial power is at the site yet, and they have a generator next to the transmitter building. And finally, KYNG, 1590, Springdale, Arkansas. Their CP to move to a new 132-foot tower and to reduce their nighttime power as U1, 2,500 watts during the day, 50 watts at night, is now on the air. Our next category is actions taken over the past month. 720 WGCR, Pisgah Forest, North Carolina. A CP has been granted to increase the daytime power and add critical hours operation. Once in operation, there'll be D1, 25,000 watts during the day, and 15,000 watts during those critical hours. 870 WGHC, Mount Holly, North Carolina. Licensed for D1, 250 watts daytime only at Clayton, Georgia on 1360. WGHC had a CP for the move to 870 with 3,000 watts daytime only non-directional, then applied for daytime only non-directional 5,000 watts back at Mount Holly, and that has been granted. 960 WSVU, North Palm Beach, Florida. A CP has been granted to increase their nighttime power to become U4, 1,200 watts daytime, 1,400 watts at night. The new night pattern is a duplicate of the current day pattern, which is kidney-shaped centered at 330 degrees, but is 180 degrees opposite. Also on 960 KMA, Shenandoah, Iowa, special temporary authorization has been granted to operate 5,000 watts during the day, 1,250 watts at night, non-directional, while they replace the center tower of their three-tower array. And also on 960 KOVO, Bluffdale, Utah, a CP has been granted to change their city of license from Provo with U4, 50,000 watts during the day, 940 watts at night from a new three-tower site using 3 days and 2 nights, diplexing with a relocated KLLB, which we'll hear about a little later. 1020 KCKN, Roswell, New Mexico, CP has been granted to alter their day pattern to a standard figure eight with equal lobes directed at 154 and 326 degrees. KCKN remains U4, 50,000 watts day and night. 1040 WZNA, Moca, Puerto Rico. A CP has been granted to increase their daytime power to become 9,000 watts during the day, 245 watts at night, and using two patterns, which is U4. 1070 WNVY, Cantonment, Florida. The CP has been granted for 15,000 watts during the day, 28 watts at night, non-directional, moving down the dial from 1090. Also on 1070, KVKA, Verndale, Minnesota, an STA has been granted to operate U1, 2,500 watts during the day, 1,250 watts at night until repairs can be made to their transmitter building and phasing equipment, which was destroyed in a fire. 1090, WCAR, Livonia, Michigan, application to move to Melvindale, Michigan with U2, 250 watts during the day, 1,000 watts at night has been dismissed, leaving them with an application for U4, 1,000 watts during the day and 800 watts at night. 1090, KEXS, Excelsior Springs, Missouri, they've been granted a license change to non-commercial status. 1110 WOMN, Franklinton, Louisiana, as STA has been granted to go silent. The reason stated on the application says technical problem concerning possible interference to another station. That was effective April 8th. 1120 KEOR, Catoosa, Oklahoma, a CP has been granted to move here from 1110 at Atoka. They'll have 2,000 watts during the day, nothing at night, using a directional pattern. 1180, that new station we mentioned previously in call changes, the new KYES in Rockville, Minnesota. Their initial CP was at Baxter, Minnesota, with U7, 50,000 watts during the day, 5,000 watts at night, and 5,000 watts critical hours. U7 is three patterns. That has been deleted. The new CP moves the city of license to Rockville with U7, 35,000 watts during the day, 5,000 watts at night, and 16,000 watts during critical hours. 1190 WAMT, Pine Castle, Sky Lake, Florida. A CP has been granted for U2, 4,700 watts during the day, 230 watts at night, lowering their day pattern and adding night service, and they'll make a slight adjustment in their coordinates. 1200 WJES, Saluda, South Carolina. A CP has been granted to move here from 1190, and they'll have 10,000 watts during the day, 4 watts at night, 6,100 watts during critical hours, all non-directional. 1210 WANB, Waynesburg, Pennsylvania. CP has been granted to move here from 1580 with 5,000 watts during the day, 710 watts during critical hours, all non-directional. 1250 WPRZ, Warrenton, Virginia. A CP has been granted for a power increase to become 8,000 watts during the day, 125 watts at night, using two patterns, U4. 1280 CHQB, Powell River, British Columbia. The CRTC has granted in part CHQB's application to move to the FM band. They applied for 94.1 with 8,600 watts, but the CRTC denied them the use of that frequency, so CHQB has 3 months to work out a plan for another frequency. 1380 KRCM, Shenandoah, Texas. CP has been granted to move their city of license from Beaumont with U1, 250 watts during the day, and 69 watts at night. 1420 KMHS, Coos Bay, Oregon. CP has been granted for U1, 1,000 watts during the day, 41 watts at night from a new transmitter site. 1460 WZNZ, Jacksonville, Florida. CP has been granted to increase their daytime power. When operational, they'll be U2, 15,000 watts during the day, and 5,000 watts at night. Also on 1460, KHOJ, St. Charles, Missouri. CP has been granted to add a tower to their standing 3 in order to become U4, 5,000 watts during the day, 350 watts at night. The new nighttime pattern has one main lobe headed west, while two minor lobes are directed north and southeast. 1480 KRAE, Cheyenne, Wyoming. A CP has been granted to move their transmitter to and diplex into the KFBC 1240 tower and increase their night power. When operational, KRAE will become U1, 1,000 watts during the day and 72 watts at night. 1510 KLLB, West Jordan, Utah. A CP has been granted for D1, 10,000 watts during the day and 840 watts during critical hours. They'll be diplexing into one of the new KOVO towers, as we mentioned previously. 1560 WCMA, Daleville, Alabama, an STA has been granted to go silent due to damage to their transmitting equipment. 1570 WNSH, Beverly, Massachusetts, a CP has been granted for U1, 30,000 watts during the day and 85 watts at night. 1580 El Dorado Springs, Missouri, KESM, an STA has been granted to go silent due to damage to their transmitter. Also on 1580, KKKK, Colorado Springs, Colorado, a CP has been granted for an increase in nighttime power. They'll become U1, 10,000 watts during the day and 140 watts at night. Another station on 1580 has been granted some movement. WTTN in Columbus, Wisconsin has been granted to change the city of license coming from Watertown. When built, they'll have U5, that's daytime directional and non-directional at night, 5,000 watts during the day, 4 watts at night, and 800 watts during critical hours. 1600 KATZ, St. Louis, Missouri, a CP has been granted for 6,000 watts during the day, 3,500 watts at night, U4, from 8 new towers, using 2 during the day and 8 at night. And finally, CHHA 1610 in Toronto, Ontario, a CP has been granted to increase their daytime power to become U1, 10,000 watts during the day, 1,000 watts at night. Besides that new station on 870 in Fitzwilliam Depot that we mentioned earlier, there have been 4 new assignments. 4 new stations have been granted. 640 in Rhinelander, Wisconsin, they've been granted U2, 620 watts during the day, 400 watts at night. The circular night pattern is directed at 037 degrees. On 1340, a new station in Nogales, Arizona, they've been granted U1, 250 watts, day and night. On 1450, a new station in Iola, Texas, has been granted 250 watts, day and night. Iola is about 15 miles northeast of Bryan College Station. And finally, on 1490, a new station in Richfield, Utah, has been granted 1,000 watts, day and night, non-directional. A couple of other items from Canada, CKPR 580 in Thunder Bay, the FM station which will replace the 580 facility, is now on the air, 91.5 MHz. The two stations will be simulcasting for 3 months when 580 will fall silent. Just imagine a medium-sized market with no AM stations, but all is not lost. For the former Twin Cities of Fort William and Port Arthur, Thunder Bay will now be known as the home of the country's number one Seven Wonders of Canada, which is a rock which some say resembles a reclining figure dubbed the Sleeping Giant of Thunder Bay. It was voted number one in a contest sponsored by the CBC. It garnered more than 1 million votes out of 33 million casts, so not as all lost for the Twin Ports. N950 CHER Sydney, Nova Scotia, their FM on 98.3 is now on and simulcasting the AM for 3 months when 950 will become history. Some other items reported to have returned to the airwaves this past month: WTOT 980 Mariana, Florida, WALE 990 Greenville, Rhode Island again, WANO Pineville, Kentucky on 1230, WNWK 1260 in Newark, Delaware, WYBC 1340 New Haven, Connecticut with a temporary long wire antenna, WJTI 1460 Racine, Wisconsin, they're in the testing stages as we report this, WVSG 1480 Neon, Kentucky is back on with Southern Gospel, and WDAP 1530 Huntington, Tennessee, and WAHT 1560 Clemson, South Carolina, both reported on. WFRL 1570 Freeport, Illinois is back after replacing their aged transmitter. KESM 1580 El Dorado Springs, Missouri. WVKO 1580 Columbus, Ohio, operating under an STA of U1, 250 watts during the day and 63 watts at night until they get all their towers up, tuned, and approved. Plate voltage in the off position, WTIX 980, Winston-Salem, North Carolina. The CRTC has approved the request of CKWX Vancouver to delete the license of its shortwave station, CKFX 6080 kHz, That station has been silent for years. Well, if you're one of the few who haven't heard that the FCC has approved AM iBach at night, well, they have. It was announced May 31st and will become effective on or about 15 July. Well, my thanks to Sean Axelrod, Perry Crabill, Bill Dvorak, Wayne Heinen, Dean McIntyre, and Dave Schmidt. If you have any items for AM Switch or have any questions about this month's column, please email me at w_r_hale@sbcglobal.net. I look forward to hearing from you. Well, coming up next is John Bowker with the next portion of the 990 Travelogue. John?
Well, thanks very much, Bill Hale. Hello, everybody, and welcome to part two of the 990 Travelogue on the DX Audio Service. Now, this is the program segment where we lock our radio dials at one place. This month it's at 990 kilohertz. And then we get in the car and we see what stations come in as we drive across the United States. Last month we introduced the channel, told you some of its vagaries, but that was from the northeastern corner all the way down to, well, we got to Philadelphia, didn't we, as a matter of fact. Today we're going to start in the middle of Pennsylvania, the western middle, and drive all the way down the east coast. There is a story with this first town, Somerset, Pennsylvania. It's at the top of the hill, coming out of Pittsburgh. Now, it's a long ways out of Pittsburgh, but as you come off the Pennsylvania Turnpike headed east out of Pittsburgh, you start climbing. And on February 11th, 1985, I made that trip all by myself, and I made one little mistake. Going up the hill, I passed a snowplow. In the east, you never pass a snowplow. There's more to the story, but let's get on to the radio stations as we start the July 2007 DX Audio Service Travelogue.
Love Fest that you won't want to miss. A labor of love. The fans and country music.
Right here on WBSC AM Somerset, Monday morning starting at 9.
I guess I should wrap the story up by telling you I made it home that night at 4 o'clock in the morning, and that was wonderful because at 9 o'clock that morning I hosted a live radio show at Quaker Bridge Mall in Lawrenceville, New Jersey for WWFM. And finally for Somerset, right after the Culpsville Convention, we recorded this in 2005.
I'm AccuWeather meteorologist Jack Boston for the NTJ News Talk Network.
WNTJ Johnstown and 990 WNTW Somerset, the NTJ News Talk Network.
CNN Radio News, I'm Stan Case.
Well, okay, it's time to move down to the state of Virginia, and why not start with the biggie? This is going to be the state capital of Virginia about 4 years ago.
This is Ed McMahon. You're listening to Richmond's number one hot talk station, WLEE, Hot Talk 990.
You did not love me like you did, but you did, but you did.
Well, I must tell you, maybe that's why I don't turn in too many format changes as I detect them driving around. I would not have called that hot talk. In fact, WLEE now in 2007... it's a gospel music station. Well, now, if you leave Richmond and go west, you come to the city of Roanoke, way out west, in Virginia. And if you keep going west from that, you come to West Virginia. Now, just inside the Virginia border, but literally walking distance from West Virginia, is the town of Narrows, Virginia. This little station, by the way, operates 5,000 watts during the day, but goes down to 10 watts at night.
WWWR 910 Roanoke, WNRV 990 Narrows Harrisburg, Family Radio.
With SRN News, I'm Bob Agnew in Washington.
Well, now as we move along on the travelogue with our dials locked at 990, we come to the state of North Carolina, and right smack dab in the middle of the state is a 10,000-watt station from Southern Pines, North Carolina. They do reduce their power a tad at night. They go down to 26 watts in Southern Pines, North Carolina.
Just Sandhills. News Talk 99, WEEV, Southern Pines, Pinehurst, Aberdeen.
And over at the eastern part of the state, we have a 1,000-watt daytimer in Windsor, North Carolina. Really, it's on the Albemarle Sound.
I'm Mark Hamrick.
And I'm Jeff Dontray in Raleigh on the North Carolina News Network.
You're listening to WDJB FM 97.7 and WBTE AM 990, serving Windsor, Williamston, Plymouth.
Hi, this is Paul C., your host of Motown Classics and a Saturday Night Dance Party. And now I'm asking you for a request.
All right, and if we go right down the Atlantic coastline, we come to the state of Georgia. And not far from Savannah is the town of Hinesville. 250-watt station with 76 watts at night. Now there would be a real catch at 990.
WGML with God's Mighty Love concludes another day of broadcasting. WGML, Hinesville, Georgia. Have a very blessed evening. And good night.
Now we proceed south, and of course we come to the Sunshine State. Hooray! And back over a decade ago, this was the sound at 990 in Miami.
This is the digital AM station, WFBA, 990 kilohertz, Miami. Sonido 990.
El siguiente programa llega a ustedes como una cortesía de Sazón Goya.
And now in 2002, Tony Simon picked up this very, very brief ID for us. And thanks, Tony.
Because Radio Disney is back.
AM 990, WMYM, Miami.
And let's face it, there's really no reason to have any more of the ID than that, because we know what the program content is, don't we? It's always the same, coming right out of that Dallas production house, and of course edited here in Tampa by the Disney people. Let's move along to Orlando. Speaking of Walt Disney, Orlando is the home of the Disney Company, of course. But if we go back a few years, here was one of the big stations in Orlando back 20 years ago.
We're celebrating Hank Williams Jr.'s 33rd birthday with Hit by Bo Cephas all day long tomorrow on WHOO Orlando.
From ABC News, I'm Don Fisher.
And with our new call sign in Orlando, WDYZ, I leave to your imagination what their format is.
Let her rip. We're back with more of your music your way. Radio Disney. AM 990, WDYZ, Orlando.
It's time for Radio Disney's Circle Time Story.
Welcome to Radio Disney's Circle Time Story.
Well, let's swing north now on our travelogue and get up into the state of Alabama. And in the northeast quarter is the small town of Center. This is a 1 kilowatt station. They cut back to less than 50 watts at night.
Music from Doug Stone. I thought it was you, right here on Country 99, WEIS. It's 4 o'clock here in Center.
WEIS, AM 990, Center.
Right now, as we continue, here's music from Bailey and the Boys.
And almost balancing that station in the city of Fayette, Alabama, in the northwest corner of the state, we have another 1,000-watt station, and they, too, go down to less than 50 watts at night.
This message has been brought to you by the National Institutes of Health.
WLDX,
from ABC News, I'm John Belmont.
A little noisy, maybe, but that's okay. At least it's ours. Well, let's see. We got time for one more city, at least. Let's go north on I-75 into Tennessee and go back to 1991 in Knoxville.
WIVK-FM, WIVK-AM, Knoxville, with the Saturday morning edition of All That's News.
Good morning, I'm Gary Rogers. The weather makes our top story this...
And by the way, this is a 10,000-watt station, both day and night. And the recordings from 1991, Let's see, Mark Strickert picked some up, Dale Hamm, Ron Clark, Steve Francis, who lives right in that area, of course. And then it was Josh Owens who visited Knoxville in 2003 with this result.
This is your crisis update station. WNOX AM Knoxville, WNOX FM Loudoun, News Talk 99, WNOX is Knoxville.
Here's the latest from ABC News. I'm Dave Schreiber. Iraq says it has no weapons of mass destruction.
Well, yes, indeed. That's what the news reports actually said in those days. 2003. Thanks, Josh. Now, Linda and I came barreling through town in 2005 to pick up this ID.
All sports, all the time.
All the time.
WNMLAM Knoxville.
WNMLFM.
Loud WNRX FM.
Jefferson City.
The sports animal.
The Fox National Sports Report starts right now.
Yep, three owners of a 10,000-watt station in a city like Knoxville in 15 years. Makes you wonder, doesn't it? Well, next month we're going to start on the western end of Tennessee at 990 on the dial. But permit me a little story. Years and years ago, I was responsible for interviewing all graduate-level electrical engineers for the Radio Corporation of America, RCA. That was true back until about 1976. And during those 10 years, one of my favorite schools was the University of Wisconsin, and all our interviews were done up at the top of the hill in Bascom Hall. And around 2:30 in the afternoon, if I was skillful enough, I got through with my interviews the days I was out there, and I would walk down the hill to a nice little building with a huge mural on the wall, and that was the home of WHA, the headquarters of the Wisconsin Radio Network. I met lots of students down there. In fact, on their 75th anniversary, they even sent me one of their LP records commemorating the event. I met with Mark Durenberger, years ago, Mark. And among the things I said was, I know you enjoy talking with people at various cities, and Wisconsin is kind of near where you live in Minnesota. Get over to Madison sometime. He promised he would. And I completely forgot about it. I've just learned that today Mark is going to be talking to us about WHA in Madison. I couldn't be more pleased, because Mark is singular in his ability to interview people. Here's Mark Durenberger.
Thank you, John, for those kind words. Yes, indeed, we have journeyed to Madison to learn about WHA, arguably the country's oldest radio station. We were fortunate to be able to catch up with Randall Davidson, chief announcer and journalist with Wisconsin Public Radio, who wrote a book about WHA called 9XM Calling. The book began as an assignment for Randall and grew to be a labor of love. We're in the studios of Wisconsin Public Radio. Good morning, Randall. Thanks for your time.
Well, it's nice to be here. Nice to talk to you today.
What dragged you into this project?
Well, when I started working at Wisconsin Public Radio, I knew it was very old. There's a historical marker from the State Historical Society that's bolted to the side of our building that says, 9XM, oldest station in the nation. I read the historical marker, and I was kind of curious, so I read some of the materials we had here in the building. And I made it a point to kind of search out on the University of Wisconsin campus where the historic records were kept, kind of by default, and over time became kind of the official historian here. So when a question of old programming would come up, or some question that, when did you start carrying the Metropolitan Opera, and when did we start doing farm markets on the air, or something like that, the question would come to me. And then about 2002, Gene Faraca, one of our call-in hosts, was offered the opportunity to do a book by the University of Wisconsin Press, and took a year off from her job here to work on it. And one day I ran into her on the street of Madison, and she said, "Oh, you got to get yourself down to the publisher." I mentioned to them there's this guy at WHA knows all this history, and they are interested to know whether or not you'd like to write a book. I had no inkling that I'd ever write a book of any kind, and so I went down, met with them, and they agreed that I'd take on this project. And so I launched in and started writing, and it's a big operation to do this, partly because I had to keep doing my regular job while this was going on. And, of course, a lot of libraries aren't open on evenings and weekends, so I had to do it during vacation hours.
This is what I mean by a labor of love,
yeah.
Folks.
Yeah, I had to. It was a lot of work, but I turned the book in 2004, and it came out in the fall of 2006.
Too popular acclaim among my community.
Well, thank you. I'm very, very happy with how it came out, and it's an important... An important story for radio history and for history generally.
Now, if you go back to the days of 9XM,
mm-hmm.
9XM has one claim to fame, as it were.
Back in the early days, when Fessenden sent out his famous Christmas Eve broadcast in
1906. That's in some dispute.
It is in some dispute now. But one of the people that worked with Fessenden was one of his staffers was a guy named Edward Bennett.
Who worked here? Who was it?
Who later came here and became an electrical engineering professor. And Bennett is the guy who got the first license for 9XM. He had had some personal apparatus.
What year? Do you have any idea?
1914.
1914.
But that was for his personal apparatus.
Right.
He sent away to the Commerce Department, got 9 for the Midwest, X for experimental, M for Madison. And then Earl Terry over in physics, who's building this new transmitter, he said, gee, I really like that. You know, could I borrow your license? And Bennett thought, well, why not?
Yeah.
So Bennett gave him the license. Terry turned right around and licensed it to the university instead of him holding it personally. Mm-hmm. And that was in the summer of 1915. That's another claim we have to longevity. The license for this operation has been held by the same licensee since 1915.
Since 1915. During World War I, mm-hmm. I understand that radio was considered a potential threat.
Yep, and there was some credence to this. There was a station in Sayville, Long Island, that turns out was sending coded espionage messages.
To the Germans.
Yeah. And when the American... government got involved in World War I in 1917, President Wilson issued a decree ordering everybody off the air. All the AM radio stations, you know, experimental ones,
amateurs,
everybody had to dismantle their gear.
Oh, not just shut it off. They had to take it apart.
They had to take it apart, yeah. And the Navy would come around and would look to see if you had an antenna wire out your house, and they'd come and they'd dismantle it. We did the same thing here. We took the place apart. And at least four of the student staff immediately were drafted as radio operators because that was a valuable skill.
Well, at that time you were sending Morse code.
It was all Morse code,
not voice.
But also it was more than just the transmission and reception of messages. Our student operators also were builders. You know, they were able to maintain equipment, and everybody kind of had to be able to maintain equipment back then.
But I understand you even built your own vacuum tubes.
Yep, we were building tubes here early on, and they were in demand by other experimenters. They're trying to get into radio. Wisconsin-made tubes were really in demand. But we were ordered off the air like everyone else. We took the place apart, but we made a special appeal to the Navy. We were doing experiments, some military experiments with wireless communications, and we got special permission to go to put the thing back together after about a month. And so by, you know, late spring 1917, we've got the transmitter back together, and we're one of the very few non-government stations allowed to be on the air. This claim of us of being on the air continuously during World War I is fine, and we were indeed operating during that time, mm-hmm. but it's not really broadcasting, because it's illegal for people to have a radio.
Correct.
So we're broadcasting primarily to it's not really programming.
It's point-to-point.
Point-to-point, experimental. Yeah. But it was actually more than, there was some broadcasting involved. We would send out a message from here, and we would have military people trying to receive it at great distances. So it was going to many places at once.
Right.
That's when we really got into doing sound mm-hmm. instead of Morse code. We had done a little bit before the war. We have a couple experimental broadcasts that we can point to that are well-documented where we broadcast sound.
Weather and farm.
Actually, music.
Music.
And we hadn't really gotten to the... Voice was hard to do, but it was easy to play a record. You could hold the microphone up to a phonograph. That worked pretty well, and you could discern it pretty well.
How much power do you think... it'd be pretty hard to reconstruct that, but in modern-day terms, how many watts do you think this thing was doing?
We were probably broadcasting... I know we broadcasted 500 watts for quite a while. We did crank her up to 2,000 watts.
This is back in the teens?
Yep.
Wow,
which is a lot of power, and of course
you had the whole
spectrum. I mean, you had the entire. There was no one interfering with you, really.
You were assigned roughly to 360 meters. I think most of them were back then.
This was before that, though.
In
1916, we were on. I think we were 1700 meters. So we were like 120 kilohertz.
Oh, so you were
way down.
Wow,
way down on the low end there.
That probably went forever at that frequency.
After the armistice, 6 months after the armistice, people were allowed to reassemble their radios.
And, of course, meanwhile, some research had been going on, so what came back on the air was probably a lot better.
And we had a little window there. After the armistice was signed in November of 1918, but people couldn't reassemble their radios till April 1919. So we had this little window. Now there's no really military pressure, and we're still on the air. We still have a transmitter that's functioning, and we have all these connections we've made with military operators. Mostly at Great Lakes, at North Chicago, but also at Manistique, Mackinac Island. And we would ask to test with them. You know, say we're testing voice. And we have a letter from the Navy, February 1919, the first clear speech was transmitted today. Now, we had done some speech transmissions before, but this was actually a document that's in the files. It's, you know, hey, nice clear speech today. Again, we have some documents later in that year, though, where it wasn't working quite so well. So we're still fiddling with the notion of how to transmit speech. Once people were able to reassemble their radios in April of 1919, now we're directing what we're doing to these amateurs who've been hungry for stuff to do. Right. They've been off the air for 2 years.
Right.
They haven't been able to listen. Now they put their radios back together, and now suddenly there's stuff to listen to that isn't Morse code. We started doing kind of a semi-regular evening program. It still doesn't rise to the level of regular broadcasting, but we were on a lot of the evenings during the week doing testing. And anybody in the physics department who could play any kind of musical instrument would get
Shanghai.
Yeah, come on down. We want to see what our harmonica sounds like.
Well, you know that from your current day experience, that even a limited time station just sucks up the programming.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
it's just a drain pipe.
Yeah.
Drain pipe. The students would come in and play the harmonica. They had a physics professor who would play the fiddle. He came in. And we'd play records. And there was no electronic way to play a record yet. So you had to hold the microphone in front of the...
And recordings themselves were acoustic.
Yep.
1925, the data says that WHA was on 560.
Mm-hmm. Yep. We were on 560. We were on 570 for a while. We were on 900 for a while. We were on 940 for a very long time. From 1929 to 1941, we were on 940.
When the big dial switch happened, and then you went to 970. Okay, so this information is still accurate.
Yes,
which
sure.
You see back
so, yeah.
Right.
WHA in Madison is 5,000 daytime. It goes down to 44 at night.
Yeah.
The idea of us getting into FM here with the network was driven not so much by having stations generating programming, but as a way to shoot the signal from WHA around the state.
That's what I mean, because at night you didn't have one.
Yeah. And so we built an FM in Madison that's been on the air. Actually, next month we'll celebrate 60 years. Yeah. And they built one in Madison and one in Delafield, west of Milwaukee. And the reason it's licensed to Delafield is because we put the tower in the state park and we could get the land for free. And then the idea was to build one in Chilton, north of Milwaukee, and that would serve Green Bay and the Fox Cities. And then, so the station would broadcast from Madison. It would be picked up in Delafield on the Madison frequency and rebroadcast on the Delafield frequency, which would be received in Chilton, and then rebroadcast on the Chilton frequency, which would be received at Rib Mountain.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd shoot the signal around the state this way. And this led to the development of the Weather Roundup, where the transmitter engineers would take turns twice a day, giving the local conditions. And then the last guy on the line, which was Highland, he would then hand it off to the Weather Bureau at Truex Field.
Tell us what that sounded like.
They'd start with the guy in Madison. He'd say, well, in Madison, cloudy skies today and about 25 degrees, winds out of the southwest, and we now go over to transmitter operator so-and-so.
And he would interrupt the signal coming from Madison.
And then he would take over, and he would do the weather for kind of what's going on. But they wouldn't give the forecast. They'd give the local conditions. Sometimes they'd say how the crops were doing, if the fish were biting And then they'd get back to Highland, and then he'd switch it over to Truax, and then the Weather Bureau guy at Truax would give the forecast for the whole state. And the thing was, we allowed commercial stations to pick this up, and many did. We had about, I think at one time, 30 commercial stations were carrying the Roundup. As long as you didn't sponsor it commercially, you could carry stuff from
When was this?
The Roundup started in 52, and it ran till probably the early 80s. It kind of went away once we started having the transmitters remote controlled.
Sure. I understand from what you said earlier that you may be interested in, or maybe someone's planning to reissue a QSL card for WHA.
We're working on that.
I guarantee you, people are sitting up.
we are looking at doing it. There's a picture of one in my book that we had a QSL card in the 30s. Well, we had one in the 20s, but we had one in the 30s. Had a very cool. Our WHA logo then was a carbon microphone with a thunderbolt through it, and we probably will use that logo design. We get very few requests during the year nowadays. We get, I maybe handle two or three a year of QSL requests. And what I do is I write them a letter on letterhead, send them a program guide, and a bumper sticker of the station they heard from, And that's the best I can do right now. But we thought if we could get a QSL card made, we could make one press run and probably last us for quite a few years. One for WHA, one for WLBL. So that's one thing we are thinking of working on. We do get requests. People call it from a distance. And now, of course, with the internet, people listen from a distance and are able to... We have pledges coming in from Australia and New Zealand and Germany and Texas and every other place around the country. So it's very, very cool. A QSL card is in the works. I'm working on that with a couple other guys here who are kindred spirits.
Great. So. And it all began with 9XM.
9XM talking.
Randall,
that's the callers.
Thank you for the book.
Thank you.
And thank you for the time.
Okay, thank you.
Randall Davidson of Wisconsin Public Radio. His book, 9XM Calling, talks about WHA, sister station WLBL, and about which station can rightfully claim credit for being the oldest station on the air in the U.S. We'll follow up our chat with Randall with two more interviews, a look at WLBL itself, a fascinating pioneer non-commercial station, and then we'll hear Randall's view on which stations claim to be first on the air. Mark Dernberger for the DX Audio Service. We'll see you in 30 days or so. And until then, good listening, DXers.
Thanks, Mark. Now we're back here on the street with a press release from the Federal Communications Commission, dated June the 20th, 2007. Today, the Federal Communications Commission Chairman Kevin J. Martin applauded President Bush's announcement of the intention to nominate Deborah Taylor Tate to be Commissioner of the Federal Communications Commission. On the announcement, Chairman Martin said, "If confirmed, I look forward to continuing working closely with Commissioner Tate. She has served admirably at the Commission for the past year and a half, and I appreciate her continued dedication to public service. Debbie brings important insight to the Commission, including her distinguished career as a leader in state government. Her thoughtfulness, dedication, and leadership have made Debbie an invaluable member of the Commission," unquote. With that, we'll flip over to Side 2 of the DX Audio Service for July 2007. We got a lot more, so stick around.